Celebrate a population milestone. When? January 1st, 2050. Where? Planet Earth. Who's invited? 9 billion of your closest friends. Catering? Uncertain. Question: how to feed a party of 9 billion people? It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It's Monday, May 5th, and it's really more than a catering problem, John. Today, thousands rioted over food in Somalia. If it's hard feeding the world now, imagine the problems when the world population hits 9 billion in 40 years. Also, the Democrats looking to North Carolina and Indiana tomorrow. That and all the news. A cyclone in Myanmar, formerly known as Burma, has devastated large areas of the isolated country. The 10-hour storm killed nearly 4,000 people, according to state radio, which also reports 3,000 people are missing. The ruling military junta has issued a rare appeal for international assistance. UN spokesman Terry Skavda says we're just learning the extent of the devastation.
It's still very, very unclear the total amount of casualties and so on because of the widespread devastation and the fact that telephone communication, everything is down.
90,000 people are believed homeless on one island alone. We will have a live report coming up. In Somalia, tens of thousands of people are rioting over high food prices in the nation's capital. Hundreds of stores and restaurants have closed and several people are injured. The demonstrators include women and children who began marching to protest after traders refused to accept old 1,000 shilling notes.
Hectic campaigning for the two Democrats vying for the White House with the Indiana and North Carolina presidential primaries now just a day away. Squabbling over gas tax relief and military matters, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama spoke to hundreds of Democrats attending an annual party dinner Sunday night in Indianapolis. Concluding her latest Mideast trip, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is optimistic about a possible peace deal between Israel and the Palestinians of the West Bank. She held meetings with Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Palestinian leaders over the weekend.
We continue to believe that it is an achievable goal to have an agreement between the Palestinians and the Israelis by the end of the year and by the end of President Bush's term.
At the global box office, Iron Man was a big success, hauling in $100 million domestically and $200 million in worldwide ticket sales.
And we are going to have more news throughout the hour from Femi. Okay, right now the question is this. Food prices are going up. What's the biggest price shock you've had at the grocery store? And is there something you no longer put in your basket?
My name is Jean Epstein. I live in Florham Park, New Jersey, and I went to buy 4 bagels, and the cashier said $3.60. And I stopped for a moment, and I said, "How much are your bagels?" And she said, "$0.90." I never heard of a bagel for 90 cents. So I said, "Please put 2 back. I'll only take 2. Needless to say, I will not go back and buy any more bagels at 90 cents a piece.
So what are you? So what are you not buying now because of higher prices? We want to hear from you, 877-8-MY-TAKE, or you can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.
The economics of 90-cent bagels from our guests and from you, all hour on The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com. The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information at knightfoundation.org. And by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Each and every one of you recognize that we are on the threshold of a new beginning for America. If you listen closely, you can almost hear it in the distance, the sound of the moving van pulling away from the back of the White House.
That was Senator Hillary Clinton speaking to thousands at the Jefferson Jackson Democratic fundraising dinner in North Carolina on Friday. The question is, who will be moving into the White House? Tomorrow, John, we'll be one step closer to answering that question when Indiana and North Carolina voters go to the polls with nearly 200 delegates at stake.
Is Hillary hearing her moving van pulling up to the White House, maybe?
I think that's her hope. With us this morning, Laura Leslie's in Chapel Hill reporting for WUNC, where a big chunk of those delegates will be decided. Also, Micah Schwitzer's in Indiana reporting for WNIN. But Laura, let's start with you. You went to that dinner on Friday night where both candidates spoke, and you described it as a thing to behold. Tell us about the evening.
Well, to begin with, this is usually a pretty sedate affair. Every year is a few hundred party workers who get together and have a nice dinner and listen to a speaker. This year they had to hold it in an arena, and they sold thousands of tickets to the cheap seats up in the stands, and about 1,000 down below at the tables came to hear the Obama and Clinton. It was really interesting to me as a political reporter, because you don't usually, on the campaign trail, you don't get to hear see both of the candidates under the same roof at the same time talking to the same bunch of people, right? So you don't get that sort of, you know, apples to apples kind of comparison. And so Hillary Clinton gave a good speech, got a warm reception. Her section of the stands was packed with her fans. But then when Obama got up, I mean, the whole room just blew up. The rafters were shaking. It was just a
shaking. Actually, literally, or are you saying that metaphorically?
No, you could feel it.
Wow.
You could actually feel it in your abdomen. The noise was that loud. So, I mean, it was just a very sort of different energy, I guess you'd say. I mean, they both got good receptions, but it was kind of unmistakable.
Let's talk about the headlines for a minute. Many of them have been talking about how Clinton is closing in on Obama in North Carolina, because in the past few weeks he's been ahead. But you make the point that actually Hillary Clinton was ahead of Obama as of January, and we're really talking about this seesaw that's gone back and forth in the last couple of months.
Right. He was ahead as of January in North Carolina, as you say. And he's been, I mean, the polls have kind of had him all over the map. And when you look at the poll numbers, when you sort of try to even them out, you know, he's held a lead of somewhere around 11 or 12% pretty, you know, regularly since then. Has it dropped a little? Yeah, it has a little bit. But he's still, as of this morning, the latest numbers have him up by 9, which is still a pretty statistically significant lead.
And what do you describe as the biggest issues on the minds of folks in North Carolina as they go to the polls tomorrow?
Jobs and the economy are number one, absolutely. I think that's true pretty much anywhere you go. But the war is also a big issue here, because this is a big military state. We have Fort Bragg, we have Camp Lejeune, we have a big military presence here, and a lot of military families really want to hear what these folks have to say about how to end the war in Iraq and bring their husbands and wives home.
I'm going to bring in Micah Schweitzer. I apologize for mispronouncing your name, Micah. You're in Indiana reporting for WNIN, where Clinton will be campaigning today in Maryville this afternoon and Evansville later tonight. That race in your state has been very tight. How are things shaping up?
Well, it's obvious it's a very tight race, and it's evidenced by the fact that Clinton and Obama have made numerous stops here over the past week or so. It's been very busy, not just with them, but also with surrogates. Here in Evansville over the weekend, we had Lee Hamilton campaigning for Barack Obama. We had the actors Sean Astin and Ted Danson here making phone calls, working at the Hillary office to make the case for voters here to turn out tomorrow and vote for Hillary. And so it's been very busy both with candidates and surrogates trying to make the case that their candidate is the one who can bring jobs back to Indiana and who can offer economic certainty in the future.
Leslie and Mike, I've got a quick question for both of you, and we'll start with Laura Leslie. It seems as though we're getting down to the fine print here when Ted Danson is a headline on Monday morning. I'm wondering if there's any sort of undecided component here, or are both of these primaries going to be about getting their voters to the polls? It's all about turnout on Tuesday, that we're really not going to have a wave of people going from undecided to decided. Laura Leslie, you begin.
Well, the latest numbers here put only about 8 or 9% of our likely voters as undecided, so there's not that much room, but I mean, it could be significant if they all decided to vote. What I have to add, what's interesting here is we have early voting and one stop. For the first time, you can go register and vote the same day, and more than 300,000 people have done so, which is like half of our whole turnout for the last
300,000. That is that's important. That's really
important. And the numbers have been a little bit lower with early voting here in Indiana. About 90 or 100,000 have turned out to vote in the past week or so with the early voting. But I think turnout is going to be the big factor for both candidates. There is an undecided component, but the candidates are hoping that that by this point people have made their minds up. I'm speaking with people, and they're still trying to sift through some of the noise caused by the Jeremiah Wright issue. They're trying to figure out which candidate is going to have the most immediate impact on their pocketbook.
All right. Well,
I have a very quick, last question. I'm just going to let's play a clip because it's interesting. This weekend, both candidates were really on the exact same page on one issue. Let's take a listen.
If Senator Obama is the nominee, you better believe I'll work my heart out for him. And if I'm the nominee, I know Senator Obama will do the very same for me. Because it will be a united Democratic Party that goes on to victory in November.
If Hillary Clinton were the nominee, I would support her in a heartbeat. And I know that if I am the nominee, that she will support me. And the reason is because our differences pale in comparison to our differences with the other party.
Laura Leslie, very, very quickly, these were both said in North Carolina. Do you think that's true? You've been on the ground with the supporters of each candidate. Are they all going to be united in the end? Will Obama's supporters support Hillary Clinton and vice versa?
Well, just to give an example, at the dinner that you're talking about, the fans for each of them, the supporters, were actually trying to shout each other down during the speeches.
Okay.
So there's a great deal of tension and division right now. I mean, it's hard to imagine that they wouldn't come together, but there's got to be some bitterness on whichever side doesn't win.
Okay, so yet more chapters to come in the race for the Democratic presidential nomination. Laura Leslie, political reporter for WNC, and Micah Schweitzer, political reporter for WNIN. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All hour, we're talking about food, and really, for the next several weeks, we're going to be talking about food, possibly for the next several years. Maybe you've noticed that the favorite item that you like to buy at the grocery store has gotten more expensive. We're trying to gauge what are the sticker shock products for you in the grocery store. You can tell us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or 877-8-MY-TAKE. You can call us and leave a message. Howard Hatch, who's a dairy farmer at the beginning of the supply chain, which is what we're checking into today. We're looking at the supply chain from farm to market. He's a dairy farmer at Hatchland Dairy, North Haverhill, New Hampshire. Mr. Hatch, good morning.
Morning.
You know, what is it that you're paying more for, and how does that affect the price of your milk at the retail level?
The two things that affect us more than anything else is the price of fuel and the price of grain that we produce the milk with.
And we're talking mostly about corn as the grain that you use to feed?
We use corn and soybeans as a supplement to our roughage, yes.
You know, last week, I used to live in the Midwest, and I used to cover the agriculture sector there and also in New England. Farmers are news junkies, particularly when it comes to agricultural news. And I'm wondering how you reacted to Archer Daniels Midland and Cargill and some of the feed producers reporting record profits last week.
Well, I could take the road and sit around and whine like a lot of people. If you can't do anything about it, it's wasted time. So we try to go in other directions, try to make money or save money in other. If I can't do anything about the price of fuel or the price of grain, I opt to try to save money or just go about it in a different direction.
Is there pressure on you to keep your prices down because of competition with other dairies?
We haven't moved our price since July of 07. We're at the point everything we have delivered here has a price increase, a fuel surcharge, and we're at the point we're going to have to do something, but we've absorbed all of these increases, and we're very close. I hope something happens before November.
That's Howard Hatch, dairy farmer in North Haverhill, New Hampshire. Thanks for joining us. He's absorbing his costs at this point, not passing them along to consumers.
And he's just the beginning of the food chain. We're going to be looking at food prices all morning. And the biggest price shock, that's what we want to hear from you. We've got a note from Kathy who's saying that
quickly,
a half a gallon of gas is $2.59.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, more about turkey and other food commodities when we come back.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
Today's conversation on The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, asking what is responsibility in this day and age? Everybody has their own opinion, discussions, and more at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, New York Times Radio, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning. We're following the devastating details that are emerging from a weekend storm in Myanmar. Hopefully, we will have a live report later in the hour. We're also taking a trip from farm to market all this hour on food prices, food riots in Somalia. In the United States, they're not riots, but they're definitely food price increases. Kathy from our website says a half gallon of milk is $2.59, and boar's head sliced turkey is $9.49 a pound. The store that she goes to no longer carries Purdue. She's outraged. More later on your responses. If you're in the market for buying a high-tech company, which is a whole different retail sector, and had $47 billion to spend, perhaps you would have taken a look at Yahoo. But Microsoft did take a look at Yahoo and balked over the weekend. Microsoft withdrew its offer for Yahoo. The question is, was Yahoo making a bet that Microsoft would go higher? Steve Lohr in the New York Times, who's covering the story, did Yahoo make a bad bet?
Yes, from a negotiating standpoint, certainly. I think they thought Microsoft has extremely deep pockets and would go up a few more dollars a share. And Ballmer and the Microsoft board decided not to.
Now, in after-hours trading, 20% is the decline in Yahoo shares. We'll see if that holds during the day. But let's talk strategy here for a moment. Microsoft buying Yahoo, it's all about, really, Microsoft confronting Google, correct? What does this mean?
Yes, and the broader context here is this was a big company in the case of Microsoft trying to move to gain some sort of advantage in this next generation of computing where more of it is done on the Internet and less in the personal computer, which has been Microsoft's traditional stronghold and where it makes all its money. And this was a big departure for Microsoft because typically it is never first to a market, but it's the company that mops up. It builds slowly and eventually becomes dominant. And that was, even going after Yahoo, was a big departure from its kind of old playbook.
You know, the scenario here, on the one hand, perhaps Microsoft would merge with Yahoo and gain some sort of market share, but there's also a scenario in high tech where a company buys a successful new tech company and the value of it sort of vanishes within the bigger company. I'm wondering if Yahoo would preserve its value over time or instead just kind of vanish within Microsoft and not be worth $47 billion, and that's what Ballmer was calculating.
Yeah, there's these technology mergers of technology companies are always kind of fraught with risk because the assets, as they always say, can walk out the door the next day, and particularly in Silicon Valley where Yahoo is. It would, if it had happened, with a huge risky move. I mean, there are a lot of people that think Microsoft inadvertently dodged a bullet by not being able to do this deal.
What do you think the strategy for Yahoo is going forward here? Do they change their business model? Do they seek another suitor? Do they trim operations? What's going on here for them?
Yeah, they're going to be under a lot of pressure to, as they say, increase shareholder value. One of the things they have been working on is essentially outsourcing some of its search ads to Google, of all people, because it has a larger share of search ads, tends to get higher prices for each ad. So then there would be a revenue sharing agreement where Yahoo gets more revenue from its search search queries than it has in the past. That's one option.
Hmm. Well,
there are others that people, there have been talk about them doing something collectively with America Online, AOL.
Another tech company whose value seems to be vanishing, AOL, that's for sure. Well, Steve Lohr of the New York Times, thanks so much. Steve Lohr covering the Microsoft-Yahoo merger that was, in the end, not to be.
And right now we have more on that breaking news happening out of Myanmar. A cyclone hit there overnight. It was a 10-hour storm, apparently. And now the state media is reporting that the death toll has risen to almost 4,000 people, with another 3,000 people missing. Joining us now is the BBC's Daniel Griffith. Daniel, can you tell us what you know now?
Well, I'm in Bangkok, in the neighboring country of Thailand, and really the full scale of this cyclone that tore through the south of Burma on Saturday, the full scale of it is only now coming to light, days after it hit the southern regions, the Irrawaddy Delta region in the south, and also one of the main cities of Rangoon. The country's state media saying that nearly 4,000 people were killed by the cyclone. They're saying another 3,000 are missing. And interestingly, state television is also reporting that as many as 10,000 people may have died in the city of Bogolay, although those reports have not been independently confirmed.
Because, Daniel, essentially five Burma regions have been declared disaster zones. And I understand at this point the junta that runs the country, a very closed country, is actually asking for international help.
Well, the scale of the disaster means that really international aid agencies want to get involved. They've certainly said they want to get involved. The United Nations already saying that hundreds of thousands of people are now homeless, many of them with no clean drinking water. And of course, rescue workers have still to get to some of the more remote districts that are cut off from the outside world. So there may be many more people who are without home today who have no access to clean drinking water. As you say, the Burmese authorities have declared five areas, the worst hit areas, disaster zones, and really aid agencies are now working to try to get essential supplies, plastic sheeting for people to live under, food, cooking stoves so they can cook some food through to some of these parts of the countries that have really been worst hit by this cyclone.
Daniel, you know, it's probably premature to speculate on this, but I'm wondering, the Myanmar regime, of course, has not been known for its political progressivism. Is it possible that the international cooperation from this disaster could possibly give some clues on whether reform is even possible in Myanmar? Certainly, the isolation is one of the vulnerabilities to this country to natural disasters like this.
I think it's just simply far too early to say. I think at this stage, I imagine, although obviously I can't speak for the Burmese authorities, but I imagine that they're simply trying to focus on getting through this disaster, on trying to meet the needs of people who have been displaced, who have been left with nothing. At the same time, however, it's very interesting to note that the authorities say they're still going to go ahead with this referendum on this controversial constitution over the weekend. That's been a very controversial constitution. Some critics say that the constitution may give the army much more power. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to see that despite this cyclone, the authorities are still saying they're going to go ahead with that constitutional referendum. Although I would imagine that many people who've lost everything will want to focus all their attention on trying to rebuild their homes and, of course, rebuild their lives.
Thank you, Daniel Griffith.
Indeed.
We're going to have to leave it there. More to come on the story and the cyclone in Myanmar,
where there are 4,000 believed dead, according to state media. More later.
The Takeaway is supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Information at gatesfoundation.org. And by the Rockefeller Foundation and its American Worker Initiative. More at rockfound.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, now featuring Mandy and Lester, a short film about a girl who loses two boxes of Scout cookies, a boy who finds those cookies, and who finds that returning them isn't going to be as simple as it seems. Available at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning. It's Monday, May 5th, and we're following food prices across the country today, talking to the people growing, transporting, and selling food. We're also going through the Sunday shows, which had a few fireworks, and we're going to take a look at the NBA playoffs. And as I said, part of our discussion is the food chain and how the folks along the line are dealing with the price upswings. Earlier, we spoke to a dairy farmer who told us he is feeling the pinch, and so are food makers and distributors. Ephraim Liebtag is an economist, with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Ephraim, are you there?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. What concerns you most about this upward trend of food prices?
Well, the biggest issue here in the U.S. has to be for low-income households and those on a tighter budget. With the higher prices, it definitely makes their purchasing behavior more limited, and they have fewer options when prices rise at an accelerated rate.
It's interesting because on one hand, there's an overall 4% increase, but on the other, some particular foods have gone up spectacularly, like eggs, for example, 30% more. That's a lot. Why the difference?
Well, the biggest factors in the food price inflation we've seen as of late are the sharply higher energy prices that we all see, because that doesn't just affect us at the pump, but also affects businesses that are dealing with higher costs. And related to that have been the much higher commodity costs, so the raw food ingredients, partially because of a kind of surge in global demand, and partially due to some supply disruptions and some other factors that have led to a lot of commodities, including rice, corn, wheat, to be up near record highs.
Mr. Liebtag, you know, it motivates me to ask a naive question. If fuel prices are such a big factor in food inflation, can consumers help themselves by buying closer to home, where maybe transportation is not such an add-on in produce and other agricultural commodities?
Well, I mean, certainly buying local may mitigate some of the issues in terms of energy costs, your own transportation costs. But, of course, the majority of food is still mass-produced and transported across the country and across the globe, for that matter. So the overall prices aren't going to change too much if individuals on a small scale buy local. What's interesting, though, is kind of the production process that may shift depending on for how long and how high energy prices go. So, in other words, some of the advantages for businesses of mass production and transportation and distribution may change. So in the short term, it's hard for consumers to deal with it that way.
That brings me to my next question, which is, as you just described, the first thing that comes to my mind is then who along that food chain, from the farmer to the retailer, what part of that chain is getting hit the hardest?
Well, I don't think there's any data out specifically that shows exactly how these things are shared. It's going to depend for each individual farmer, manufacturer, wholesaler, retailer, and consumer. You know, in general, the more bargaining power you have, the easier it is for you to pass on costs. I think it really varies more on the scale, the size of the business, and then where consumers end up shopping in terms of how much more they're paying.
What do you make of the record prices of Archer Daniels Midland and Cargill?
Well,
profits.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the when prices are high and you're selling a product that's high priced, you can take get additional profits that way. I mean, obviously, the raw commodities, the raw ingredients, the seeds, those are all in high demand. And so at this point, you know, it's not like this as much as the oil companies, but certainly when prices rise this fast and this high, someone has to be making a lot more money, at least in nominal terms.
Ephraim, I'm going to ask you to hold on for 1 second because we'd like to bring in Brian Fromm. He works for a company that hauls cattle and grains. And Brian, you've been so worried about what's happening that you actually organized a rally for truckers. What were you hoping to achieve?
Yeah, we on the 28th of April, we organized this rally. And our deal was to bring attention to our federal government to help the small businesses of this industry. It's not just the trucking industry that's getting hurt. It's all small businesses. Our costs just get passed on down the line, and we are trying to get attention to the federal government. Big oil's making record $123 billion profits in the last year, and we're having to absorb the cost on this fuel that's went up $1.40 in 1 year alone in costs.
And Brian, can you break this down for us just to give us a sense of what you mean? Because in other words, how much has your daily cost for fuel as you carry materials across the country? How much has that changed? Can you give us specific numbers?
Over 1 year, our increase in cost has went up 35 cents a mile, which doesn't seem a lot, but you average that over a truck that does 12,000 miles a month average, comes up to $4,200 a month that these guys are having to absorb.
So wow, you're saying $4,200 additional costs.
Right, exactly. Above and beyond. This is taken off the bottom line of what they make, right?
That's an enormous amount of money. Awesome. I think that you've said that you have friends, you know, truckers who are handing in their papers, handing their trucks back to the banks because they're just not able to make ends meet. Are you seeing a lot of that, and is it your expectation that will continue?
Foreclosures in trucking industry are up 57% from a year ago. Bankruptcies are up 32%. Yeah, you know, in business that I do, we see that each and every day of guys just hanging it up or taking the keys back and handing them back. So what that translates to is more people on the jobless market, you know, I mean, or unemployment market, and fewer trucks to be hauling the produce, which in turn, eventually, all this is going to lead to is higher increases in the trucking, because guys are going to start putting the prices that they need on these to keep in business. Right now, we're not able to translate these extra fuel prices to the products.
But eventually, it's going to make its way to the consumer. That's right.
Eventually, right. Eventually,
Brian,
this is going to get passed on.
Right. Brian, thank you very much. Brian Fromm, who's a trucker hauling cattle from South Dakota. We also were speaking with Ephraim Liebtag, who is with us, an economist from the USDA. Susie in Manhattan says a head of red cabbage is over $4, and it's not even organic. And someone else from Manhattan says corn has risen so much. Last year, oil was on sale for $6.99. Last night, it was on sale for $11.59. More responses.
And more headlines. Femi, okay. Femi.
Hello there to you, Adora. Just getting you up to date with the news story that comes to us from Myanmar. Myanmar is just along the eastern side of the Bay of Bengal. Myanmar's military junta is calling for international aid following a tropical cyclone that's left a humanitarian crisis in its wake. The 10-hour storm left at least 4,000 people dead. We're still getting fluctuating numbers in. And in one small area alone, 3,000 people are missing. And in Somalia, at least two are dead in riots over high currency and food prices in the capital of Mogadishu. Tens of thousands are on the streets and Somali troops opened fire on the crowds. Welfare rolls are up in 27 states in the last 6 months of 2007, and this is a reversal since the numbers have been steadily falling for more than a decade. And in sports news, 22-year-old Anthony Kim became the youngest PGA Tour winner in 6 years. He had a nearly flawless performance in his final round at the Wachovia Championship.
I knew my life was changing on 18 green when I was lining that putt up. It was so special, and I'll never forget that feeling. And it's just all these emotions were starting to run through, and I realized what I had done, and all the hard work is paying off.
Anthony Kim celebrating his win, and that's your news for now.
Incredible
Femi,
excitement of golf. Incredible.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com. You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Yesterday was Sunday, and of course, in America, Sunday means pundit day with all the Sunday political talk shows, and with two primaries coming up on Tuesday. See if you can guess what the word of the day on the Sunday talk shows was.
The epic Clinton and Obama battle continues.
Federal gas tax.
This gas tax gimmick.
Gas tax.
Gas tax. McCain-Clinton gas tax.
Price of gasoline.
Gasoline. High gas prices. Who wins that argument in North Carolina and Indiana?
Well, no more calls. We have a winner. Gas tax, if you guessed it, was the word of the day yesterday.
Then you get a Lexus, right?
You get a Lexus. That's what I always say. But it's interesting. You know, the gas tax issue seems like a fairly small issue. And a week ago, we were talking race and Jeremiah Wright. All of a sudden, it's now narrowed down to this gas tax thing. It seems to me, as I alluded to earlier, we are way into the fine print of this campaign at the length that it's at.
I don't know if I would call it a small issue. It's really a big issue for lots of folks, including the trucker we talked to not long ago who was saying that's now costing him an extra $4,200 a month to do his business.
Well, I think fuel prices are a big issue. I don't know if reducing the gas tax is a serious solution to it, but in any case...
Well, that's the debate.
Yeah, I think that is the debate. But you know, speaking of other details that we are into, here's another indication that we are way into the fine print, at least in my opinion.
Hello. I'm Tom Hanks, and I want Barack Obama to be the next president of our country. As official celebrity, I know my endorsement has just made your mind up for you.
That was actually all over the wires, that story, that Hanks endorsed Obama. What do you think of that?
I think it cracks me every time I hear it. It was so self-deprecating. I mean, obviously, he's sharing his thought, but that's okay. And it's funny. It comes after, well, not funny, but also this weekend, I should add, in Guam, they had caucuses, and Obama apparently won by just 7 votes. But in the end, Hillary Clinton walked away with 2 more delegates towards, in their march towards 2025 for the nomination. And that means now Obama has 1742.5.
Right. Half votes there in Guam.
Hillary's Clinton's 1607.5.
You know, you told me...
According to the Associated Press,
you told me an amazing story this week. I mean, a lot of people maybe don't know that your husband is a correspondent for NBC News and
is
following the Hillary campaign. And apparently word was in the press corps about the Kentucky Derby.
Oh, there was lots of discussion, he told me, about the Kentucky Derby because apparently Barack Obama had chosen Big Brown to show.
Who was the favorite?
Who was the favorite, who he ultimately won the race.
And who did Hillary choose?
And Hillary was choosing the only filly in the race.
Eight Bells. Oh, that's the terrible story.
It's very sad.
Who came in second
and she
broke both ankles.
And she just really made a burst with the big boys and she fell down right on the track and she was... put to sleep there.
And so the reporters looking for a metaphor.
They were looking for a metaphor.
Ouch.
Yes. Oh.
Well, that's politics for this segment. We are also asking for your sticker shock moments in the grocery store in the food price wars. And we have one response from 8778-MY-TAKE.
This is Joe Campisi from Bayside, New York. Just want to report artichokes at $3. Per artichoke, and Norway sardines, $6.79 for an 8-ounce can.
Stay tuned for more information about artichokes and sardines. Artichokes and sardine news, only here on The Takeaway.
Today's conversation on The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, a forum for examining the decisions that confront people trying to do the right thing. Discussions and more at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, New York Times Radio, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning. It's Monday, May 5th, and we are continuing to follow that devastating cyclone in Myanmar. We'll have more on that shortly. We're also taking a look at food prices and asking folks, what have you been shocked and stunned by when you go to the grocery store? And interestingly enough, Jax tells us on our website, no change there. I cook vegan, no meat, dairy, or fish from scratch, and buy mostly fruits, grains, veggies, and juices. I have the option of changing recipes when certain items get more expensive and others not.
So the future is vegan, apparently, in this food inflationary spiral. We are tripping our way down the food chain. We're going to talk about retail, food retailing in a moment. But it's NBA playoff time. We're down to 8 teams in the playoffs. And it appears that Kevin Garnett of the Boston Celtics versus LeBron James of Cleveland is perhaps the story of the moment. Their series begins. On the line, Lisa Salters is the NBA courtside reporter for ESPN. Good morning, Lisa.
The Boston Celtics have been my favorite since the playoffs began, but, you know, they had such a tough time against Atlanta. Atlanta took them to 7 games in order for Boston to advance, and a lot of people didn't see that coming.
So, ouch.
So now people are kind of looking twice at the Celtics, wondering, if they were exposed a little bit by the upstart Hawks. I'm still picking Boston and LA in the finals, which of course is what the network is hoping for, a kind of a throwback finals.
All of the NBA is looking for that. That is
absolutely
for sure. No more this San Antonio Cleveland idea here. Small markets. But Kobe Bryant certainly with 38 points last night made it seem like LA's got some momentum.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think of how this season started for Kobe Bryant. He did all of that complaining in the off season, threw everybody from the owner to the general manager under the bus for not making the team better, said that he wanted to be traded, you know, a superstar saying that he wanted to be traded. The owner of the team, Dr. Jerry Buss, saying, certainly, we'll take offers. Come on, send offers our way for Kobe Bryant. So you just thought that this was going to be another miserable season for the Lakers, and now look where they are.
How important?
They are the front runners in the West.
How important is it for Kobe to win one on his own?
It's really important. I mean, he would probably say that it's no big deal, but it is a big deal because for so long he was linked to Shaquille O'Neal. People blamed him for the fact that Shaquille O'Neal left Los Angeles, said that he would probably never win again without a big man like Shaq. So it is important for Kobe. And, I'm really happy for him that, the reports are that he will be named the league MVP this week, probably on Wednesday. Just really happy for him that, he's gone through so much on the court and off the court that yesterday when we sat him down, he admitted that it is special for him. He just hopes that all the reports aren't wrong. But he said it is a special moment for him because the knock on him so long was that he didn't make his teammates better.
Well, and Kobe's
a
tough...
Now people are seeing that he really does.
Kobe's a tough character to root for on some levels. And I'm wondering if the real Cinderella story, depending on how things go, is with Chris Paul down in New Orleans.
Well, certainly. I mean, the baby-faced assassin is what we call him.
Really? You really player. Call him that? The baby-faced assassin?
Yeah, I mean, he just has such a baby. He looks like a choir boy. So sweet, so innocent looking, and he is a really nice kid. But you get him out in the court, and he's as tough as they come. The MVP race, it was a two-man horse race, Kobe Bryant and Chris Paul. And I'm sure that there were lots of people who, because they don't like Kobe Bryant, probably voted for Chris Paul. But it really was hard to deny Kobe this year. He's been the best player in the league for at least 5-6 years. But people, didn't want to give him his props because they don't really like him all that much.
All right, well, we'll hold you. We'll hold you to your prediction, Lisa. Adora, go ahead.
And just in the interest of full disclosure, I have to say thank you, Lisa Salters, who is actually a friend of mine and who we have dragged out of bed on the West Coast to join us this morning so that we would all be caught up to date on what's happening in the NBA. So, Lisa, many thanks.
You're welcome.
And Lisa,
what? I don't know if I'm going to be able to go back to sleep now because hearing the grapes are $5.25 for a pound, I can't understand what that's about.
And just in the interest of full disclosure, we're friends now too, right, Lisa?
Absolutely.
All right, take care. Lisa Salters from ESPN. Thanks.
And we are, of course, talking about food, as Lisa just mentioned. And it does grab your ear. And we've reached the end of our journey from tractor to takeout. Paul Hay owns a family business in Brooklyn, Christie's Patty, specializing in West Indian food, like Jamaican patties. And he's been forced to put up a sign in his shop. Paul, what does that sign say?
It basically explains why I've had to raise my prices on my patties, which is the staple for me. I live and die on my patties, and that's flour-driven.
Flour-driven, and you are telling folks that you've had to raise the price 15 cents. And what's been the reaction?
Well, everybody, I have not heard a lot of negatives. Most people understand because they know what's going on. People are reading the newspapers, they're listening to the radio, and they themselves are seeing in the supermarkets what the prices are. And so I've had a lot of understanding customers.
But wheat is actually up, the Asian markets this morning, wheat futures up nearly 3%. So clearly, at least not today, those wheat prices are not coming down. How are you able to cut corners? So besides adding 15 cents to your patties, what other things are you doing in order to manage through these rises?
Good question. I've had to look seriously at my labor cost and reduce labor.
Have you laid anyone off?
I have had to.
I have had to.
I'm doing 17 hours a day, 14, 15, 16, 17 hours a day to cut cost. It is,
and we should add, this is a family business that's been around for 40 years.
Correct.
And you have been at the helm for 10 years, and you say this is the worst it's gotten. What are you most worried about now?
Well, you know, the instability is what worries me more than anything else. Because as businessmen, we can adjust. And in the past, you would make an adjustment to an increase in price. However, now they change so abruptly and so frequently that you really can't make any decisions where that is concerned.
You know, we should add Christie's Patties in Prospect Heights, Brooklyn is a legend. I mean,
famous.
You've got a brand and there's a line outside your patty shop. But for a smaller business that maybe doesn't have the reputation, they don't have as many options as
they won't survive. I'm going to just make it clear. They won't survive.
Other businesses in your neighborhood haven't, actually. Tell us about your next-door neighbor.
Oh, my next-door neighbor, a Chinese restaurant, Chinatown restaurant, one of the best restaurants in Brooklyn. And he's a friend of mine. I went next door. He said, you know, Paul, I can't hold this thing together anymore. I'm working 18 hours a day, and the prices are going up and up and up. He says he doesn't see anywhere else that he can cut.
Who do you blame for this? Who do you blame? I mean, we've been telling everybody, you know, record prices by some of the grain producers last week, or record profits by some of the grain producers last week. Is there someone to blame, or
is it
just the way it is?
It's the oil. It is the Middle East. It is the war. Don't let anybody tell you anything other than that. It is the oil, the Middle East, and the war. You cannot create this kind of instability in the Middle East and expect that your oil prices are going to be stable.
Can you cook patties with solar energy?
That is something I've been thinking about, to be honest with you.
Wow.
You know, I've been thinking about whether or not I could run my ovens on some sort of a solar thing, but then I'm thinking about the upfront cost of what that, you know, that will be. That sounds like a lot of money that I'm going to have to spend upfront to get it done.
Well, you know, how to do that, how to get government grants to do that sort of thing for small businesses is maybe a subject for a subsequent show here on The Takeaway. Paul, thanks so much for joining us.
And asking folks, what's been shocking you? We've heard Paul's story. We heard from a trucker. We heard from a dairy farmer this hour. And Rick Evans says to us, oh, please, the fattiest fatties in the world are complaining about food prices. Americans spend about 10% of their budget on food, and that includes fast food, wasted food, Poland Spring water, and cities with excellent water, and all those crappy-tasting, processed convenience food aimed at soccer moms and dads with more college education than elementary cooking schools. Give me a break.
That's bitter.
What Rick says.
Bitterness, Rick.
Well, we do have
angry
a lot
Rick.
Of food choices here in this
yes,
country.
Yes, that's true.
But it is
that's
interesting
true.
To see how it's not just about the food itself. It's about jobs, as we heard.
From Paul.
Our friend
yeah.
Paul. He's yeah. laying off people
that's
now
right.
because it's
that's
getting
right.
too expensive to run his business.
Well, we can update you on the news, right?
We can, because in on the cyclone in Myanmar, the state radio station says the death toll has risen to nearly 4,000 and that 3,000 other people are unaccounted for. This is just the beginning, John, as you and I have covered many disasters all over the world. I'm sure those numbers are more likely to get higher than lower.
We're also talking about food prices. You can keep your responses coming to thetakeaway.org. You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org. Call 877-8-MY-TAKE. Your voice will be transcribed into messages.
And if you saw any movies this weekend and would like to hear your review, tell us what we have to go see and what we can avoid in 6 words or less.
6 words or less. We also have blogs from David Wall Rice, our contributor from last week. And you can see me at the scooter shop in Brooklyn, in Red
oh,
Hook, Brooklyn.
Oh, I just can't wait.
Being towed. Hey, it's scary, actually. All that on thetakeaway.org.
The Takeaway is supported by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information at knightfoundation.org. The Rockefeller Foundation and its American Worker Initiative. More at rockfound.org. And by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.